So that's August 14th, 1985.
Yep.
And your name is Oliver Näsman.
Näsman.
And there was Alvar, you said in
Yeah, Sweden. In Swedish it's Alvar Näsman.
So if we start now with your, you were born in
Jersey City, New Jersey. Yeah.
And so your parents, they came from Sweden then in what year?
Yeah, and
both of them came from Sweden?
Yes, they both came from Sweden. My dad comes from up northern Sweden, Sundsvall.
Sundsvall.
Yeah.
And his name was
Peter Näsman.
Peter Näsman.
Yeah.
Do you know when what year he came from Sundsvall?
She would have it all in the books, but the home. I don't know, just, well, it's, it was 1900, must be, he was here, he was here during the war, 1914, so it must be maybe around 1900.
So you were born 1911?
Yeah, 1911,
he
so.
Must have been
there
before.
Sure, yeah.
Unless he sent the
book yeah,
here.
Yeah, so you have figured before 1911.
And how about your mother now? She came from?
Småland.
Or
yeah, she come from Långaryd or Kvib, yeah, Långaryd, Småland.
And her name was.
Her maiden name is Annie Carlson.
And she came from the same time then as your father.
Just about them, I'd say. Just about maybe the same time.
So they came then both to New Jersey first?
Yeah. She came to Brooklyn because she had cousins there in Brooklyn. So they got her over to Brooklyn. She worked in Brooklyn and in New Jersey, New York, doing housework for some of the people, the rich people down there. That was her trade.
And your
when
dad,
she come over,
he came to where?
Yeah, well, he come to Youngstown, Ohio, because he had a brother, the oldest brother come. He had a older sister that came first, and she was married to an Anderson, and they came and they finally went to California, and they were in California. Sinzat, that was Martha, his brother, his oldest sister. And then after that, they got my old, his brother over here, Ed Näsman. So then from there on, then they got my dad to come over here. They all got the whole family over here.
So the parents too?
Yeah. No, not the parents, just the brothers and sisters. They took them away from them over there in Sweden because his father got married again.
So how big your family was it then with your father's?
Well, there was, one and Axel, Ed, and then my dad. There was three boys and about five girls.
And they all came over?
Yeah, they all come over here. And some were in Cleveland. For years, the girls married and were in Cleveland, and then his brother got to Youngstown and got into steel mills, so he got my dad working the steel mills in Youngstown, and then the younger brother come over, and it was Axel, and he was in the steel mills in Youngstown, and that's where they worked for quite a while, and then they went out from there.
So your dad, he ended up in New Jersey then?
Yeah, then he went to New Jersey and got a job in the shipyards. Because he had an uncle in New Jersey. So he got down there and going down there and working in the shipyards down there. Well, then that's how he met my mother. And she was working down there in Brooklyn. So all Swedes got together there. And that's how that come about.
So how long did they stay in Jersey City?
They stayed there. I left, we was three, the oldest born. It was me, my sister, myself, and my brother was three of us. I was 5 years when I left New Jersey. And then my sister was 2 years older, and then my other brother was 2 years younger. So that, and then we went up to the farm and bought a farm up in Scandia by Warren.
How did they come about now, the farm buying?
Well, it happened to be his oldest brother married a girl from, that was in Scandia, Lindstrom's. They had a store at one time in Scandia, a country store. So then his oldest brother met this Lindstrom's through some of the boys that was working in Youngstown. So then he married one of the Lindstrom girls. So he told my dad to come up and buy a farm up there, because, you know, he wanted to get out of the city anyway. So he bought a farm and started to farm, and he bought two more farms, put them together. So we was up on we was up there about 40 years before he went off the farm.
40 years?
Yeah, we was on the farm. He stayed on the farm till he was not able to.
How big of a farm was it?
100 acres.
100 acres, and it was clear land?
Yeah, well, half and half. We had half woods, timber, and then half of it was cleared. So we always had about 12 cows and some young stock, and then we had a team of horses. And that's the way we made our living.
Do you remember when you moved from Jersey City to Scandia?
No.
You don't remember
that? No, I don't remember that. But I remember when I was about 9 years old. I remember that because that's when the war broke out. So that's when I remember when the war broke out and all of them went to World War I. And then my dad had to go to work in a defense plant because, you know, or he'd have to go into service. So they took him down, he went back there to the shipyards and went to work because he could get deferred down there and work in the shipyards.
Do you mean he couldn't stay on the farm?
No, we wasn't big enough, and so he would have still had to go into service. We didn't have enough family yet, the big family. Well, he couldn't get deferred yet.
For three children and a wife?
No, because he just went down there and went to work, and then he didn't have to go into service.
So your mother then had to take care of the farm?
Yeah. We rented the farm to another one man up there, and he run the farm when my dad was in New Jersey.
So your father now, was he accustomed to farming, or what family did he come from in Sundsvall? Your dad?
Well, no, they had a little farm outside of Sundsvall.
Well, they had it, so he used the farming then.
So that him and his dad worked, they didn't do much farming, just enough to live. And then he worked on the boats between Sundsvall and down towards Sundsvall and up there in Tunderö. The boats traveled back and forth, so he worked on the boats in the summer. And then him and his dad took off for the woods in the winter. And they went up in the woods camp, and cut wood for the winter, then come back down in the spring. And then he'd go on the boats. Then he left Sweden. See, I think it was, wasn't it 20 years? When you were 20 years old, you had to go into the service.
Yes.
Xera. Yeah. So that then his brother was over here. So then his brother sent for him, and so he just come over here to America, so he never went into Xera. And then the whole family come over from then on.
So you remember then when he went into to work for the defense or during the war?
Yeah.
So how long did he stay away then from home? Did he come?
Well, he was there about not quite a year, and then the flu epidemic come, you know.
17.
Yeah. And it just wiped everybody out like flies here. So he was in, he put in the hospital down there then.
Well, he got it.
Yeah. And they thought he was going to die. They just shoved him out, but he fooled them. He didn't die. So he got through it, and then he took a train back home. And then recovered, yeah, and recovered up there and come back home, and then he, that was the end of that. Then he stayed on the farm and run the farm. Yeah, he got out of it and went back to running the farm.
So he took over the farm then?
Yeah, and that's where we was for about 40 years.
So when you got old enough, then you had to...
Yeah, we all had to, we all started in one by one.
What were you doing then, the first job on the farm? Did you have to...
You have to plow. You have to, that, you know, you had the plows that you had to hold with your hands. We didn't have no big sulkies or anything. No. Plowed and then drag and put in the potatoes and put in the corn. And that's the way you kept on, to pick stones off the field.
Stones?
A lot of stones there. So we had to pick all the stones off the fields.
Every year.
And then we made new fields. Build new fields all the time, cleared it up, cleared the land.
You were grubbing then.
Yeah. So we get more land to plant. So that's the way we lived.
So so you were turning the soil in Scandia then?
What?
You were turning the soil in Scandia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any more Swedes around that area?
Oh, we was all Swedes in Scandia.
Did you talk Swedish then most of the
time? Yeah, I learned to talk. We went to the Swedish Sunday school. They had a mission church, which was all Swede. So we learned to talk Swede in the Sunday school, and they sang the Swede and they preached Swede. So we learned the Swede. So we could talk pretty good and understand all Swede.
Did they have summer school in the summer?
No. We on the farm, you had to work.
Yeah. The church didn't have any summer school?
No. We just lived with all them Swedes up there. And most of the Swedes in Scandia come from Småland, I found out when I, you know, figured it out. And a lot of them come from Småland, Sweden. My dad come from, he was about the only Norrlänning up there, my dad. So they were all Smålanding. And
they had all about the same size then, 80 acres, 100
yeah,
acres?
Yeah, they all cleared land, keep clearing land, and they all had about the same, and kept about 12 cows or so, and that's the way they lived.
So at that time then, when you came there with your parents, it was pretty wild country and somewhat, you had to clear.
Oh yeah. Yeah, our farm was so we could farm.
Yes.
But then when we bought two more farms, then we cleared more land.
And there was land that never been cleared before?
Yeah, we took some of the woods out. And
what kind of woods? Hardwood?
Oh yeah, they had all kind of wood. They had hardwood, they had beech and maple, and they had a lot of hemlock, and they had pine, and all these, and that's the main trees they had. That is, a lot of beech and maple and hickory and hardwood like that.
Was it, there was not the kind of wood like you had in the Cane or Ludlow and Sheffield, though? There was bigger wood country.
Oh yeah, there was a lot more.
They
of course.
Different.
Yeah, because they come in there and cut logs and peel bark and they work the woods. And because they had tanneries all over.
Were they running then when you were in Scandia in 1920? Tanneries in
Sheffield? Oh yeah. And a lot of them had sawmills all over there. A lot of them went and worked with sawmills.
Did somebody from Scandia go into Ludlow and Sheffield to work?
Oh yeah.
They did?
Well, they went in, yeah. And they went into wood camps in the summer and peeled bark. They had wood camps. You just go in there and work, and then they feed you. They had cooks in the camps and everything.
So your dad, was he on the...
No, he never went in the woods, because he run the farm.
So there was enough then to take care of?
Yeah, there was enough, so we was taken care of.
So you had a younger brother then, 2.5 years younger?
Yeah.
So you both helped out then?
Yeah, oh yeah. We I stayed till I was about 17 years old, and then I went to Jamestown. And then I got in the shops in Jamestown. And then I was worked in the shops in Jamestown and worked there till I was about 21 years old. Then I got to Kane, there's where I got married. So then I've been, was in Kane ever since. That's about 52 years or more I was in Kane after I was married.
When you came then to Jamestown, was it the metal factories, Dalton?
Yeah, all them. Yeah, I worked to Art Metal, number one, and then I worked to Watson's Metal Furniture.
And then there was in 1920...
That's where when the Depression started coming, 1930.
You came to Jamestown.
Yeah, that's when I was there about 2 years, and then Depression come, and then you're laid off.
Were the unions then in Jamestown at the time?
And they were working at it, but they weren't all union yet.
No.
No.
Were there any Swedish socialist group in Jamestown?
You
socialists
mean?
They
had that time. Depression come, and of course everybody in Jamestown was out of work, and all the Swedes were in Jamestown then, you know. So they had the communists started a socialist a communist party. They call it the Workers' Club. So then that was out of New York City, and they had a workers' paper, and they put out, and then they had meetings all over, and they were signing all these people up, because they didn't know they just call it the Workers' Club. So they signed up, and what was the best thing that happened, Roosevelt got in then at that depression, Roosevelt got in as president. So then when he got in and start things going, so everybody got work again and everything, then they forgot the Communist Club, or they called the Reds, and they called it the Workers' Club.
Were you with the group too?
No, I wasn't old enough. I didn't get into that, because I still had work. I had some work up there. I got a job on a summer home in Stockholm. So I had work. So, but through that depression coming in like that, everybody started getting work and everything, so they just forgot that.
So
that workers' club.
They petered out then.
So that was the end.
What happened then to the workers that signed up with this party? Did they
They didn't have to sign up. No, they didn't sign up. They just was organized and going to the meetings, but it wasn't in yet. They had a few. They had a few that was going in the running for office in the government at that time. A couple communists, but.
Well, they were outside this from New York, you said?
Yeah. Yeah, and they were organized in New York City, I think. The paper was printed in New York City. So that, everybody got satisfied and got work, and they just forgot that. Then, of course, they learned more about it, and they found out that was the communists trying to get in, which they would have if it wouldn't have been for getting a president like Roosevelt. He got in there and got things backed to normal, so that was the end of that. That was the end of the communists.
Any strikes at that time when you were in jail?
No strikes yet. Mm-hmm. Roosevelt is the one that caught in, and he made a law that you could organize, and you were allowed to organize. So then they did organize, but before that you weren't allowed to do that. But he made a law that they couldn't throw you out, they couldn't fire you, they couldn't do nothing just because you wanted to organize. Then they organized, you had to vote. And then you could vote the union in or vote it out, and that's how it started.
How long did it take now before the management accepted the unions? It took a long time though before.
Oh yeah. And the coal miners are the first ones that pushed it. They got it in. The coal miners, John Lewis, they organized the mines. And from then on, he just went out and kept organizing labor all over. And so then, one right after the other, got organized.
But you worked at Art Metal, class
yeah.
number one.
Yes.
There was no organization there.
No union then. No, it
How
didn't.
How much were you paid then at that time?
Well, I was paid, yeah.
29?
Yeah, that was, I was paid, I think we paid 54 cents.
An hour
at that time.
And there was 10
and
hours.
We worked 54 hours a week in the shops up there.
So you worked Saturday, two and a half day?
Yeah, half a day.
Yeah. No vacation pay or anything?
No vacations yet.
How about hospitalization?
Nothing. No, there was nothing.
So if you got sick then or damaged yourself, injured yourself?
Yeah, that's nothing.
To you?
Nothing. But they had a compensation. Then New York State got compensation in through Albany, you know. So then they had, if you got hurt, they had to pay, you know, what happened if you lose a finger or anything like that. You had a hearing and then they'd tell them how much you're going to get in compensation. If you couldn't go to work, then you paid so much till you could back to work.
You have to pay into that?
No, that was by the state.
The management didn't have to pay?
No, we didn't have to pay into that. Now, I think maybe the management had to pay into it, the owners. They had to pay into the state for this protection for their men.
Mm-hmm. So it was easy then for the factories to hire people all the time? I mean, it was...
Oh, yeah. They were waiting. In fact, then, of course, after they got the Depression over with, you know, then Roosevelt put on a 40-hour work week. They call it the NRA. And then they could just work your 40 hours, and then they have to, if they wanted more, they have to put two shifts on. And that's when I got in the factory. They put two shifts on, and I went on the second trick, because he couldn't work you over 40 hours. They used to make you work day and night, and you couldn't do nothing about it. If you didn't like the work, go home.
Well, you couldn't refuse.
No protection. No, you got to go home. And you don't have to work if you don't want. If you can't, don't work. You go home. That's all. They fire you. You get out of there. So then, after got NRA, then
what,
you could.
What does this stand for?
What?
NAR. What does this stand for?
Well, National Labor. I can't remember now. National. NRA was the national. I forget just what the abbreviation, but that was so that the 40-hour work week, and they had to put on two shifts if they wanted more. If they want to have more work, you put on two shifts. That put more people to work.
And what year was that?
That was in 1936. When all that come in, and then they had if you want a union, they couldn't fire you just because you won. They had to give you a vote. You could have a vote in the shop. They come in and run a vote, and if the majority vote union, the company had to accept it. So that's how that started.
What was the feeling then when you talked to your buddies? I mean, if you didn't want, you refused to work, for instance, you had to go somewhere and so on. Was there a general feeling that this is the way it was and there was no way to...
Not until we got the protection from Roosevelt, made the rules and laws to protect the working people.
So there was like slavery, actually.
Oh, it's the same thing. A lot of times you work 10 hours a day, and maybe 5-6 days a week or 7 days, and you couldn't say no. And that way, and then you didn't get that much wages, and they wanted it that way. There was no overtime or nothing. So then after they got 40 hours a week, then the unions got in, then you start fighting for more work, more wages and protection.
No vacation.
No. Then when we got the unions in, we had a contract, and then we get the vacations in the contract. Sometimes we organized that one, that shop there. We was 3 months in the picket line before he'd accept it. And then he did finally accept it. We didn't get too much, but we was protected. And we got a vacation, got a week's vacation, and then we got 50 cents an hour.
Was that before the Second World War or after?
That was before
the Second War.
Oh yeah, that was before. Yeah, that was during the 1930s, between 29 and 30 was the bad, you know, depression.
Oh, so you had actually a week's vacation then,
yeah.
In 1937?
Yeah. Yeah, then we got in, so we got a week's vacation to start with in the contract.
You paid vacation?
Yeah.
Paid.
Yeah. Before they laid us off, before they shut the plant down for 2 weeks for, you know, to repair it, and you went home and didn't get nothing. You just went home and sat there. Didn't even have enough money to buy groceries, you know, till it opened.
And it was the same thing all over Jamestown.
Oh, that was all over Kane. I was in Kane then, but that was all over the world until they got, the unions got in there. And they couldn't get in there until President Roosevelt made law that they couldn't, they had to accept the unions. They had a right to vote for the unions. Until he made that law, you couldn't get no unions. But he made a law, they had to accept it. So that's what helped the working man. That's what started all this we got now.
So when you were working in Jamestown, were there any colored people or Italians and Albanians in there in the work?
Yeah, we had some. Yes.
But not too many?
No, not too many, no.
How was the feeling between the Swedes and the Albanians?
Mostly had in Jamestown that I had anything to do was Italians. But they were getting along good. We was getting along good with them.
Were they in the position of being foremen?
No. The Swedish was always picked to be the foreman because the Swedish people always had an education from Sweden and a trade. So, and most of the people at shops in Jamestown were run by Swedes and owned by Swedes. So they always wanted the Swede to be the boss or foreman or superintendent because they were qualified, even from Sweden. They had that, you know, training where the Italians didn't have no training. They couldn't even, a lot of them couldn't even sign their name. They couldn't even write.
What kind of work were they doing then, comparison?
Well, they would get, most of them was just labor and do the dirty work because they didn't have a trade. They'd have to sweep the floor and do all that stuff, you know, and their labor.
When you were having a lunch break now, for instance, you had no coffee break in the
morning? No, at that time there was no coffee break or nothing.
Half hour lunch break or 1 hour?
No, half an hour for dinner. No, that didn't come in until the unions were all in, and then they made agreements in the union that we're going to have 15 minutes at 9 o'clock lunch break. And that's when that come in.
And at that time there was no lunch rooms or anything?
No.
Where did you eat your lunch then, or dinner?
You were just going to sit any place where you were working or anything.
Were you sitting together with the other workers too?
You'd kind of, yeah.
But they
didn't want you to sit. They were after you. They didn't want you, if they want you to eat and go to work. We didn't have no protection, you know. So you just grab something to eat and that's it when you're working.
So you were not sitting talking then for 5 years?
No. There was no.
It was against the rule then.
Yeah. You just eat and work. If you could work and eat, you work and eat. And the restrooms. They didn't have hardly any good restrooms at all, dirty and everything else. Well, I worked in the boiler shops, but the wooden places, furniture shops and them other shops, they had restroom where where they had toilets and that. But they, after the union and everything, they had to fix them up. You could have places. Of course, the union did all this.
And in Jamestown, in the early 30s or late 20s,
yeah.
All the machinery, running the machines, were overhead belts.
Yeah, most all run off the big belts and pulleys.
How long did they continue?
Well, that was during the after Depression. They were modernizing then. They started making machines that, you know, motors and everything, and had the individual machines and presses, punch presses, and all these things. Brakes, and that was modern.
Were there many accidents happening with those belts?
Oh yeah. Well, the belts, no, they're not too much with the belts.
No.
But they had more and the presses and things, you know, cutting your fingers off and getting it. You had to be more careful. And then they want production, and then you
side two in this continuation with Oliver Nesman. Largo, Florida.
Yes.
And it's August 14th, 1985.
Yes.
After the day's work was over.
Yes.
What were you doing then? I mean, you were young and in the 20s. They had a lot of clubs and lodges.
Oh, yeah. Well, they have the sports and everything, baseballs and whatever what you wanted to do.
Were there Swedes now? In Jamestown, you could see that it was a Swedish town.
Sure, yes.
So talking Swedish on
yes.
the street.
Yes, oh yeah.
And in the factories,
yeah.
The stores.
Yeah.
How about the sport now when they were playing soccer?
Well, a lot of soccer ball. Oh, they would play, it's all Swede. They were all Swede. And of course they had the Swedish dances, and then they had the of course, Jamestown was quite big then. Then they had night school, where you could go to night school and learn more about the factory work, or being a machinist, or learn to operate machines. Or a lot of them went there and learned language, learned the American language.
Who paid for that?
That was by the city of Jamestown. The school was there, and they had night schools. So you just go down there, and they had the teachers there, and you could take up different things. You could even take up auto mechanics and things like that in an high school.
Like the factories, not like Art Metal and
yeah.
Armstrong and the Crescent Tool. Yeah. They didn't have any schooling to.
No, they didn't have no schooling for you. So for most of them that wanted to learn something or get someplace, even like a lot of them went to school to learn to speak, and a lot of them did and learned the language, and that was they got further ahead that way, and the Swedes were very, they wanted to, so they learned the language.
So the Swedes, they were the king of the heap then in the
during
the Depression, more or less.
Yes.
What happened to all those people now without work? Did you see any misery in town during the 30s, because you still stayed in Jamestown.
Yeah, yeah, 30, yeah
30,
sure, yeah.
What happened to those people now, not married, no work? What could they do?
There was nothing. There was nothing they could do, and a lot of them had to join together and live in a few rooms, you know, three, four fellows or so, and then chip in and get. Maybe something, they'll get a day's work or something, and enough to buy something to get something to eat. Salvation Army always give them some bread that, you know, from the bakeries that they threw out. They would help them. Of course, they weren't citizens, so they couldn't go on welfare, because they were, very few of them had become citizens yet. So they got help that way, and then they'd be able to, they just help each other.
How about you now? Because you were a citizen.
Yeah.
Could you get welfare from the state?
Yeah. Well, my dad was still on a farm, so I could always go back on a farm and work with him. But I got work up. I had work through the Depression, because I worked on a resource.
But you said in Stockholm.
Yeah, Stockholm.
Where that was located now, between Jamestown.
Jamestown, right outside of Jamestown, up towards Mayville.
Well,
this was R.C. Sheldon. He had owned a great big summer home up there, and he hired about five. He had about seven of us working, so I worked on the farm with a caretaker. So I got so much a month and my board. So for 4 years I worked there through a depression. Now I didn't suffer at all. I made it. Then I'd help some of the other Swedes to get some produce from the farm or something. I always got some eggs and things. Yeah, and so they could survive and help them. And of course, they didn't know that, but we had plenty. So they didn't know. They didn't miss any eggs or anything that I'd get for them. So that's the only way they survived till they got that depression over and Roosevelt got in.
So they was bad then at least 4 or 5 years?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'd just fish maybe and run around up there and that's the way they had to. And then a few work maybe a day or get a day or 2 days or something, and so they get a little money to live, to cook themselves, of course, and that's how they survived.
During that time, though, how about the young people already to getting married? Did they put off the marrying?
Oh yeah, a lot of them did. Oh yeah, they had to put it off. Yeah, unless some of the girls did work, had work, where the fellows didn't have work. They had silk mills up there in Jamestown, a lot of silk mills.
Well, they were still
there. Oh yeah. So a lot of the women were sewing up there and had some work when the men didn't have any work. Yeah.
So, were they run by English people, though, the city?
Yeah. I don't know what they...
There was no Swedes running those.
No, I don't think so. I forget who they're the cloth... I forget who... There was one worsted mill up there, and they had done a lot of sewing and everything, and so a lot of women. They took a lot of women in there, so they had some work.
Some of the guys now move out, or the girls, they couldn't get a job. I mean, to Cleveland.
Oh yeah, some took off, but as the rule, a lot of them didn't, because there was no work, no place. It didn't do them no good unless they had somebody that could help them, get them in someplace.
So they were afraid then to move?
Yeah, oh yeah, there was no work, no place. It made a difference where you went. The country is down. It was no work. They just had to wait it out.
What town was the most likely they moved to? Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Youngstown, Buffalo, New York?
Well, a lot of them, I think most of them stayed there until it was over. When it was over and Roosevelt got in and got things rolling, well, the shops come back then, and everything was picking up, and they've been good ever since.
Do you remember if anybody went back to Sweden?
Oh yeah, there was a few that went back to Sweden. They had to go back to their family maybe, and so they had to go back.
So you mentioned in our sport and soccer, and were you active in anything like that, like soccer?
Yeah.
Baseball?
Yeah.
Did you play?
Well, I played soccer for a while with the fellows up there, but I really didn't have too much time, because being on the farm, we got up 5 o'clock in the morning, and then we worked till 6 at night. So when I got done that, I didn't feel much like getting into anything else.
How did you get into town from Stockholm? Because there's a few miles.
Yeah, well, a car. I always had a car.
Well, I had an old car.
Yeah, I had an old Model T 26. So I always kept that running and got some gas.
So it was cheap to have a car at that time?
Oh yeah, I bought the car for $80 and I run it and got gas for it. But of course I was working where the others weren't working. So if I had the car and the other guys was working, why, I'd have the car and they'd take them with.
Were you still looking for a job when you had this 4 year job there at Stockholm?
No.
You still looking for other jobs?
No, there was no other jobs. I had a good thing and I stayed there. I had $40 a month, room and board. And you couldn't make that no place.
You wouldn't take a chance either?
No, no. No, not until after when Roosevelt got in and he started getting things moving. Then I moved to Kane and got married.
Yeah, how come you moved to Kane now?
Well, I happened to meet this girl in the Swedish dances we used to go to up around Jamestown and all over, and she happened to come down with her brothers to the dances, and I met her at the dance.
And there was us, dude.
Yeah.
She lived in Kane then.
Yeah, she lived in Kane. So then from there on, I went up there, and then is when the thing starts moving, and that's when I got into whole Gates Brothers, made the brush handles and toys.
So were you married and you quit the job at the...
Yeah, I quit the job and then I got married.
Did you have a job then in the future like that?
No, I was... She had a job up there and made... I guess she made $15 every 2 weeks. And we lived in with her mother and brother. And that's how we survived until...
But you couldn't get a job up in the Canada.
No, not. But then I got on WPA when Roosevelt got in. See, then he started WPA, where you go out on the roads and fix roads and everything, and then he had the CC camps, where all the people from the city, young fellows, went into camps and worked in the woods, and they'd pay them so much a month.
And you stayed at the camps then?
No, I didn't go to the camp.
You didn't go?
No, I stayed right to home.
But the ones that went into the camps, they stayed all week.
Yeah. Well, they stayed, they went in for the months or for maybe, a lot of them stayed there for a year in the camps till things start going, and then they finally quit the CC camp.
And they had room and board in it.
They got a room and board in their barracks and worked out in the woods. They worked them. And so that's when everything started coming back. And that's what made...
So how long did you have to wait until you got the steady job?
Well, I was... I worked that summer. I worked out in the woods and cut some wood and made it that way. And then the next fall, then they got WPA started. So I went out there and worked on the road. We was allowed to work 3 days a week, $5 a day. So that was that. There, then you were a millionaire. So then after that, then the NRA come in. They had to put two shifts on, and I went up, got a job in the shop, and was there ever since. I was there 7 years till the war broke out, and then I left there and went down and learned to weld in Warren and Struthers, and then I worked welding all through the war.
In Brentford.
Yeah, in Warren. I learned in Warren Struthers welds. So I worked there through the whole war. And since that time, I never been out of work.
So you never went back to the farm then, as you came?
No. I didn't go for the farm work.
You didn't
want to
go back to the
farm? No, there. I didn't
want to
go back there. That was too hard work and no money. But we always got enough to eat.
So your dad, he continued himself then?
Oh yeah, he continued, and then I had younger brothers. So as the younger brothers come along, one right after the other, so they helped them.
And you were members of the Covenant Church then in the...
Yeah, and Scan, that's the only one they had.
How about in the Jamestown? Did you join any church there? Or?
No, I didn't join the churches there. Of course, when I was up there on the farm, you had to be there 7 days and work 6 days, and then work Sunday. We just had to be there and do the chores, so... I didn't join the church till we got back to Kane. Then I belonged to Lutheran Church.
So that guy you worked for, now there were seven guys you said working for.
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of estate was that?
Sheldon is the state, and he was a president of the bank, and he had stock in the Eastman Kodak. And that's where he got all his money. He was a millionaire.
So he didn't lose any money during the depression?
No, he had the money.
He didn't lose it?
No, he didn't lose it.
But there were people that lost money, though.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them.
Houses?
No, he was pretty well. He had a lot of that stock, and then he was a president of the bank, so.
In Jamestown?
Yeah. So,
how about now people losing their houses and the mortgages and everything, foreclosures?
Yeah.
Did it happen regularly? Or?
Yeah, a lot of them lose their homes. And a lot of them had to move home with their parents and move in and live together and everything else to survive at that time. And then if you were a citizen, then you could go to welfare and you could get some food and help from the from the welfare.
But non-citizens didn't get anything.
No, you were non-citizen, you couldn't get it because they took care, they couldn't give it to you until only Salvation Army and some of the places helped them.
How about the mayor of Jamestown, Sam Carlson?
Yeah.
You remember him?
Yes, I remember him. And he come back from Sweden with ideas of Sweden. So he come back there and he started his own water company. And then he started, electric company. And he run that. The city of Jamestown had their own electric and water company. And he got that idea from Sweden. He isn't living.
No, but I mean,
yeah, but they still have it there. They still have their own water company and they still own their own electric company.
Do you remember when he lost selling the milk though? It didn't work.
No.
He tried to get city-owned milk.
Yeah, that did. No, he didn't get that in the co-op stores. There were a lot of co-op stores started in Jamestown. But that's what he did for Jamestown. Of course, now it's changed too because it's so big that now they're buying some electricity from the Niagara Power. Because the plant is big enough to furnish it all.
Was he considered as a socialist, you think?
Well, yeah.
Did they call him that or?
Well, yeah, they'd be socialist because that was his, that's where he wanted the socialist. And if he could have had his way, I suppose he would have had socialized medicine too. Because he was for that, and that he was over in Sweden and studied it, and he figured that they could do that here. Of course, being Jamestown was pretty near all Swedes, why he started it. And
when did the Italian come in all in the picture into the factories and all over?
Well, they come in.
They were there.
They were there when I went there, so they were there. Italians were coming in there and were in there in the shops working.
How come they moved in so many though?
Well,
were they after the war?
Yeah. That was that not the, the that would be the First World War
the
that
first
they would
war.
Come in. Yeah, First World War. They maybe come in, and then after they get in, I suppose they got their relatives and send for relatives and everything to come over just like the Swedes did.
And they settled in a different section.
Yeah, different sections. Yeah.
And first, the Swedes didn't take any Italians off for dates or anything.
No.
No joining hands.
No, yeah, they just lived their own lives, but they got along good. Yeah, they got along good with the Swedes and the Swedes that they worked for the Swede bosses and everything and they got along good.
And then after World War II, they started to.
Yeah.
They came in as foremen. Sort
of. Oh yeah, then they, of course, then they go to school and the younger, come in there. Then they learned a lot of the trades and everything too.
Could you see any difference of were the Swedes more aggressive union member than the Italians?
Oh yes,
they were.
Oh yes. See, the Swedish people were union when they come over here, because the Swedish people and. As I understand, the Swedish people coming from Sweden, they'd already organized union in Sweden. And they'd had gone through all that in Sweden. So when they come over here, they knew all about it, and they wanted to be union, they wanted union. So they pushed it to get the unions, because that's what they had over there.
So you mean the Italians, they didn't want to push it so far then?
No, they
were afraid to lose the job.
Yeah, they wouldn't get involved. They just go along. They were afraid of the job too, so they didn't dare. They didn't have the, they didn't know no different anyways. Yeah.
So of the Swedes now that came to Jamestown, there were not too many land-hungry Swedes.
No.
The land and farm.
No.
Because all the land was taken over.
Yeah,
There was no way to come in there.
No, they'd start a factory and build a factory, and there was plenty of land. So they
didn't. Not the farming though, in other words, they didn't look for farming.
No. Well, a lot of them come in and farming too, but they didn't go for farming too much. until afterwards. Some of them come in and went on a farm and started the farm.
So you came back then to, did you join the Vasa or Viking when you were in Jamestown?
Yeah, I belonged to both of them.
Both of them?
Yeah. Well, I didn't join the Vasa. I belonged to they had, in Jamestown, they had the SFFA in Jamestown, in the Vikings.
Well, John Erickson.
Yeah, then when I come to Kane, I joined the Vasa. And then I've been there ever since.
How come people then also, you know, join all three of them?
Yeah, because I...
Why did you do that?
Because they were Swedish, and they all had their dances and good times and everything. So they
And all had the benefits?
Yeah. Yeah, they had sick benefits.
So you could collect from all three?
Yeah, you could collect from the SFA and Vasa. You could collect from them with their benefits.
So they paid to be sick then?
Yeah. Yeah, but it wasn't that much, but it was protection.
Well, but being without job. And
yeah. Yeah, and then it even when we went to work, we always belonged. Because you had to have protection. We didn't have any Medicare and all this then. We had to help each other.
Do you think most of the Swedes belong then to one of the other?
Oh yeah, they all join so they get protection. Yeah. Yeah.
So in Kane then you joined the Brahe?
Yeah.
278?
Yeah, that's right.
And how big of a lodge was it then in 1940, for instance, during the war?
Well, we went, our lodge went up to about 325 at one time, members.
What year was that?
That was maybe in the 40s.
So there was that many?
Yeah, we was way up just as high as on them.
So there were a lot of Swedes then?
Oh, there's a lot of Swedes around there. And we got, we was that high.
But there was also one in Montjuïc, smaller.
Yeah, a small one.
But you took the members then from Kane and...
just from Kane area. We was that many in the lodge.
And you met at the church, or where did you meet?
No, we had a hall. We had
a hall?
We had we rented the hall uptown, up the Odd Fellows Hall. We had that all the time.
Once a month?
Yeah, and then we had, besides, we'd have maybe dances on Saturdays, and some would have them Fridays, so there was always dances a couple of week, Swedish dances.
What kind of programs did you have to lure people in there? I mean,
well, most of the benefits was why they joined, because we had sick benefit. We had two classes. We had A class and B class. A class, I forget what they paid, about $8 a week or whatever it was. Then you could buy the second B, then they'd double it. But you paid more. Then they'd double it if you wanted to belong to both. You know, raise it, then you double it, and then they paid double the money when you were sick. And they'd play, so I can't recall how many weeks we had that we could, you know, collect. But them days, of course, it didn't cost you that much for doctors or anything, so. But then you lost work, so that helped you. Of course, them days you didn't make much money working either, but it still give you something to eat when you're where you get ready to go back to work. You at least could eat, so, and that's why they started it in the first place, you know, Benefit Lodge.
So, being 300 members, then when did it start to drop off? Then after the war, or
after the World War II, then it starts dropping, because the a lot of the old people, younger people, they dropped first, the younger people.
Younger people.
Yeah, because then you start getting Medicare, and you start getting benefits and protection from other insurance companies. And then they could buy, working like that, then they could buy insurance that was better than just the lodge could give them. They could get better benefits, because then they had some money to work with.
So Vasa couldn't compete then with the...
Oh, no.
With the insurance.
No. Of course, they still could belong, you know, for... They still stayed in there, though, because we had a lot of fellowship, and, you know, and good activities for the Swedish people and everything, programs, and we visit each other's lodges, and then the, of course the lodges in Jamestown come down with the drill teams and put on the drills and initiations, and so it was pretty active.
You always had the drill team with initiating new officers every year.
Yeah, well, we didn't. We never had a drill team. So we'd call on Jamestown, or Warren had a drill team,
the
too.
The whole drill team for Jamestown?
Yeah, they all come down and put on a drill team. We get a lot of members coming in, and they'd come down and initiate the members. They had the drill team and uniforms and everything. Of course, Jamestown, boy, that was a lot. They had everything up there. They had all the Swedes and... You know,
and you went there also for doings.
Yeah, and we went up there to doings, visit each other and everything. A lot of fun. Dancing and everything all the time.
And you went also there for playing your accordion.
Yeah, I played for some of the dances. And, yeah.
So then in the 50s and 60s, you could see it was going to drop off more and more. People drop
sure.
off. Sure,
yeah.
And pretty soon only you and Mabel Engman left.
Yeah. we was about seven of us. So you gotta have seven members to have the lodge, keep the lodge. Because you gotta have enough for officers.
Yes.
So then we didn't get enough for officers, so we had to we had to give it up. Just like a lot of lodges around here had to do that. The younger people didn't go into this. They had their own activities, the Masons and the Elks and the Moose, and they were another generation too. A lot of them couldn't talk Swedish like we could or understand it.
What did the officers say now? Because you were also on the district board.
Yeah.
Executive board.
Yeah.
Representing your lodge.
Yeah.
What did the officers say now, like district masters and vice district masters and past district masters?
Yeah.
What did they tell you what to do to get in more members? And
oh, they always tried to tell us what
look in the
to go out, yeah. Go out and get them, but of course, they didn't know the condition we were up against.
What did you say then? I mean, you have to explain to you.
Yeah, well, I said that...
Defend yourself.
You just, I said, you can't force them, and the young people have gone their other way. And then most of the young people here and Kane... In other places, they were moving, because they went out to other cities and got jobs and better jobs, and so they were moving on. So then you lose a lot of the members too.
Left.
So finally, it was just the old timers left. Yeah.
So, was like whipping a dead horse.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about now attending the conventions in different cities here?
Yeah.
There was hardships for you, I mean, to have delegates and paid delegates to go and so on.
Oh, yeah. Well, when our lodge was active, we made money. We had money then in the treasury. So then it was good. We always managed then. And then we even had district lodge number 9 here in Kane on conventions 2 times and entertain them and everything. Yeah. So we always had, you had to sell chances and all these things to raise money for the conventions, to get enough money to put it on. And then they always paid you so much to have the convention. So we had good conventions here. A lot of activities, we were well known all over, down to Philadelphia, even all over.
But when you put on something like a district convention, you had to work real hard over this.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have help then from Engelbrecht and Warren?
No, no, we did it ourselves. We put the whole thing on.
Nobody.
You'd have to get the hotel, you'd have to get the rooms organized, you know, and then you had to put on a banquet, and then you have a dance, and all this, just like they have it yet today. So that we did all this.
Then when you had to go out of town though.
Yeah.
Then you have hardship because you had to take off from work.
Yeah, yeah. If you was a if you was a delegate or on the, like, an executive board, delegate and going to the convention, usually you had to take off a couple days, because usually the conventions start, they used to have it on Labor Day, but they'd start on, they maybe start on Saturday and Sunday and Monday, but then they changed it. And if you was going to drive someplace, you'd have to take off Friday, and maybe you wouldn't get back to work on Monday, you'd have to come back on Tuesday. So that was your, you had to sacrifice that.
So because your lodge couldn't afford to pay
you? No, you couldn't afford, they paid us so much a day, $10 a day we was allowed for
your lodge.
For the delegate, yeah. And then the district will pay, the district always paid for one delegate, yes. The district. And then you paid, if you sent two delegates, see, our lodge with 300, we was allowed about five delegates with that membership. So then we'd have to, you know, furnish some of that money.
And then you got 10 cents a mile.
Yeah, they'd give us the cheapest way to get there. And then the last bylaws that they made up was that if you couldn't get there any other way, they'd pay you 10 cents a mile.
But there was no other choice though from Kane, because there were no buses running there.
No, it was pretty near impossible to go to any place out of Kane without driving your car. Well, you could get on a bus, but then the buses weren't running.